Wow, hi.
Hey, Danny.
Let's see, start video. Okay, we're all here. Got a full house. We are recording. This is Parsha Korach. And in past years, I've defended Korach. I've defended Datan Aviram, and this year we're going to defend his 250 men. That's the way the parsha starts. As part of this grand rebellion, source one, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kat ben Levi, Korach, son of Yitzhar, son of Kat of Levi, took, along with Datan Aviram, ben Eliav, who were the sons of Eliav, On ben Pelet, B'nai Reuven, son, who were the children of Reuven, and Kumul of Moshe, and they all got up in front of Moshe, but Hashim ibn Israel, and men from Israel, Chamishum Matayim, Nisiei Eda, 250 princes of the community. Kriyei Moed, those who were called to the Moed, to the assembly. Anshei Shem, men of name, people with fame. So 250 of them, they are somehow Nisiim. Obviously, there are only 12 Nisiim of the actual tribes, but presumably these are the sub-Nisiim, assistant Nisiim. They're important people. 250 of them all went with Korach. And Rashi describes the story of what these 250 did. We know this. Agada, source 2, Me'asa, what did Korach do? Amad b'kanas reishnun, roshei sanhedriot. Korach went and gathered together 250, literally heads of Sanhedrin, heads of assembly, political leaders. That's a synonym for the Nisiim. Ruban meshevet Reuven, shcheinav, most of them were from Reuven, who were Korach's neighbors. Remember the structure of the camp. Kahat's family of Levi was on the south side of the Mishkan, and Reuven was on the south side of Mishkan, so we assume that's why Korach could talk to Datan Aviram, because the Kahatites were together with Reuvenites. Behem Elitzur ben Shteyur b'chevei Rav. Because that was Elitzur ben Shteyur and his friends, Bechizbo, and similar ones from other tribes, all the Nisiim, all the major leaders. Demar Nisi Eda Kri Moed, that these were the heads of the community, the ones who were called to the assembly. Halan O Omer, we'll look at this pasuk, where it's talking about the original Nisiim, they were called Ela Kri Haida, these ones who were Kri Haida, that's the same phrase, the ones who were called of the assembly. And you got them all dressed in cloaks that were entirely made of tchelet, sky blue. This is Rashi. Rashi is quoting the Tanchuma, which is the Midrash, right? The pasuk doesn't say anything about tchelet. So he's got all these men dressed in all in tchelet. They all stood in front of Moshe, Amru Lo, and they ask him, Talit shekulo tchelet. You have a robe that's all made of tchelet. Do you have to put tzitzit on it? Put a fringe on there, put another thread of tchelet on there, because we know tzitzit requires tchelet. Does it require tchelet on this cloak that's already full of tchelet, sorry, made of tchelet? Aram lahem, he told him chayevet. Yet, it still needs to be tzitzit on there. Tchil l'schok olav, so they started to laugh at him. Efshar talit shel minacher, if you have any kind of other robe, chut echad shel tchelet potra. That one thread of tchelet at each corner, that's enough. It's fine, you can wear it. Zeshakut tchelet, but you have the whole thing that's all tchelet. Lo tiftar atzmai, it shouldn't be exempt itself. Obviously, it's got tchelet on there. Why should I put another thread of tchelet on there? None of this makes sense.
Is that really the halacha?
That is the halacha. Leah asked, is that really the halacha? The answer is yes, that the requirement of tzitzit has nothing to do with what the garment's made out of. In other words, if the garment's made out of tchelet, it still needs your thread, your tchelet tzitzit on it. Yes, that's true. And so these are the Nisiim, and Rashi quotes the
chok then.
I'm sorry?
Danny, this is a chok, because it doesn't have to make sense.
That's true. And we can talk about the symbolism of it, and we will. And so these are the Nisiim, these 250, including the 12 actual heads of the tribes. That's what Rashi is quoting when he talks about these that were appointed to be standing there with Moshe, Torah 3, beginning of Parashat Bamidbar. Yitchem yiyu ish ish lamateh, and with you. Hashem tells Moshe, will be one person per tribe, each Rosh Levet Avotav, who, one man is the head of each family. These are the names of the men who will stand with you. The Reuven, Elitzur ben Shteyur. The Reuven, the Nasi of Reuven was Elitzur ben Shteyur. That's what Rashi says. That was one of the Nasiim that went with Korach. And then the Shimon, Shlumiel ben Shushadai, that was Shimon's Nasi. Yehuda, Nachshon ben Aminadav. And Yehuda, the Nasi was Nachshon ben Aminadav. We know that name. The ancestor of King David. Nachshon was one of the Nasiim that got killed? Nachshon was one of the Nasiim. Later, he asked, is Nachshon one of the Nasiim that were killed? So Nachshon clearly was one of the Nasiim. And these were called Ela Kriya Heida. These ones were called to the assembly. That's exactly the phrase that was used here. So the question was, did Nachshon actually die beforehand at Kibrat Hava or here? That's the question. But clearly he does die, because by the time he goes to Eretz Yisrael, Yehuda's got a different Nasi. Ela Kriya Heida, Nasi Matot Avotam, these are the princes. Roshe Alfei Yisrael, Ham, these were the heads of the thousands of Israel. And these are the ones that went with Korach. Excuse me. And look at that. The Agada about the cloaks of Tehelet obviously is connected to last week's parsha, because that's where we end of last week's parsha was the mitzvah tzitzit, which leads into Korach. So that's why we connected two of them together. And then plus the idea that the cloak that is all tzitzit, that's all Tehelet rather, goes with Korach's claim that Kol Ha'edah Kulam Kedashim. That's the symbolism there. All the people are holy. Why should you, Moshe, think you're special? That's parallel to this whole cloak is made out of Tehelet. Why should you need one special Tehelet thread on there? That's Korach's populist demagoguery. But I'm going to put a different spin on the metaphor of Tehelet. I'm going to look at these 250. Which the text does not directly identify. Rashi gives them the name. We had the Nisim named in the previous parashiyot. Here they're not named. And that's part of the ambiguity, because the assumption is that they're not so terrible people. It's not clear if they're the villains here or the victims here. They've been pulled, they're being pulled with Korach. And this is the Datsakani Bali Tosfot. Talks about this. Why they're anonymous? We know Korach, Datan of Iram, we know everybody else's name. These people who are in the Nesiim, they're left unnamed. Mashal leben tovim, parable to a child from a good family. Shenimsa gonev kelim bebet merchatz, who's found stealing stuff from the pool. Lo haya ba'al hageneva, and the person who owns the victim of the crime doesn't want to embarrass the family. They're just gonna. He needs to make sure his parents know that he's been caught stealing, but doesn't want to say anything publicly about it. Rotella Farsamo, and he wants to make sure the parents know about that this kid was caught stealing. He'll obtain Bosi money. So he's not going to announce that this is the person who stole, here's who it was. He's going to describe him, give him some money. Amrlo Migana Pelecha, they'll ask who stole all this stuff. Amrlo Ham will say, Ben Tovim, who's a kid from a good family, Bal Koma, he was so tall. Beinav Naot, he had this nice eyes, Vesiro Shachar's hair color was black, so Tov Taltalim, he had long curly hair, Vakotmov Zakuf, and a big nose. And Mishnatana Simanim Halalu Hikiraho. So as soon as he describes the person that much, everyone knew who he was talking about. The parents knew who he was talking about, they could discipline him appropriately, but not necessarily embarrass him in public. Afkan, Afal Pished, Satmam. So here too, even though the Torah doesn't say, the text doesn't say who they actually are. Says Monica too, the text doesn't say it. Aydei Asimanim, but they tell you who they are. They're Nisiyeh Heidah. They're Kriyei Moed. You've used that phrase before. I tell you Deimim. You know exactly who they are. Aydei Ben Shteyur, Nachshon Ben Aminadav, and all of that. So we're trying to kind of leave their status a little bit up in the air. We don't want to embarrass them too much. And the Baal Turim says that's what Anshei Hashem means. It's something positive, sort of. They're called Anshei Hashem, people of, literally, of a name, little famous people. He says they're B'chochmah V'osher. They were wise and they were wealthy. That's what Anshei Hashem means. Why those two things? And I think that's connected to the Gemara in Shabbos, which the Rambam quotes, sort of six, Eina Nevuah Shura Ela Al Chacham Gibor Ba'Ashir. And if you're going to have Ruach HaKodesh, in order to be a Navi, or any sense of leadership, of religious inspiration, you have to be Chacham Gibor and Ashir. You have to be wise, strong, and rich. Why those three things? Those three things sound familiar? So Rambam says what's connected to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Ezu Ashir Hasameach B'Chalko. It's not talking about literally being, you don't have to be rich in order to be a Navi. You have to have that, the characteristic of feeling that you're rich. You have enough. You don't need more. So he says, B'Chacham, who kolel kol ma'alot ha-sichlot b'sofeh. Chacham means being intelligent, being wise, without a doubt. Ashir hu ma'alot ha-midot. To be rich in this sense is a personality characteristic. Hu amram begeder ashir, because that's what it says about being rich. Is ashir hasamech b'chalko. You have to be satisfied, not want more. That's what it means to be an ashir, to be a navi. V'chein gibor. Gibor, it says, that's also a personality characteristic. To be a gibor, to be strong, you have to be able to withhold, to be able to conquer your instincts, conquer your tendencies, be able to control yourself. So the Baal Turim says, well, they had the Chachma side, the Osher side, and strikingly leaves off the Gibor side. We'll have to look at that. And then he turns it around and says, well, that's the Anshei Hashem. They were almost ready for being for Nevuah. They had two of those sides, but no, there's another meaning of the word Anshei Hashem. Yitchayvu kedora mabul, and they end up being they were found guilty like the generation of the flood, because it says over there about them Asher me'olam Anshei Hashem. Same phrase used about the generation of the flood. Those were destroyed. They're Anshei Hashem. And the art scroll. Sorry, over here. The art scroll on Baal Turim makes that connection. What does Anshei Hashem mean in the connection with the Mabul, with the flood? It's Rashi's meaning of Anshei Shemamon, destruction. Shashim Mata'olam, they destroyed the world. So Anshei Hashem is ambiguous. Is it a positive thing? Level close to Nevuah is a negative thing if they actually were destructive. And the answer obviously is yes, both of those are true.
Famous or notorious?
Yes. And that the difference is in the eye of the beholder. So what happened to these people here? So the Netziv famously, for those who not like Parshanut, defends these 250, that they were fundamentally good people. This is the Emek Davar, this is the Netziv, source 8. Hodiya katub ad kama higiya koch divrei nargen shel korach v'datanda tanva aviran. The pasuk is telling us how powerful this argument of Korach was, that it even brought these wonderful people into them. They were victims, they were convinced. Ad shelok lachulev, until these people paid attention, ad shemala halalu, these wonderful, these high-level people. Shemitzad svara lo hayuri'im lavo, v'dei midazu. Because it doesn't make any sense that they would have joined him. They've joined. L'marla Moshe Baron Lamed Titnas Uakal Hashem, that they would tell Moshe, why are you lording over us, the people? They're in the Siim. They had that sense of leadership already. Imitzaychu Nesiyeda. They already were the leaders. Kol Manhig Yodan. Everybody who's done any kind of leadership knows Efshal Hanhig Et Hador B'li Eza Hitnasut. That you need some sense of leadership. You need, in order to lead, you need some sense of control. You can't just follow the crowd. And the fact that they were Kriyim Oed, they were called to the assembly. Whenever a decision had to be made, they were the ones who were there, because they worked with Moshe and Aaron. They knew what they were like. They knew that they were Moshe's humility. Aaron was one who was Rodef Shalom. They shouldn't have rebelled. That there were these good, high-quality people. That an elevated person, would never do such a thing. Moshe Pev Lashon, to talk Lagid, Lemisha Gadomi Mena, to talk to a great person. Maduot Nasu, they wouldn't tell them off. But feel imayakin, Hashem. Even if it was true, they would talk personally. They wouldn't publicly go and rebel. So it doesn't, it's hard to see what they were thinking here.
What does the word Ephrati mean here?
It's like for the beginning of Ruth, where it talks right. about Elimelech as Ish Ephrati, which could mean so from Ephrat, but this here means of it certainly used agadically, and that's why the Emek Davar is using it, of being a noble person. Translates noble.
Okay.
Right. You can discuss whether it means that in Pshat and Ruth, but clearly that's the way he's using it here. So what happens to these 250 Nisiei Eda? Source 9. We know the story. Vayomer Moshe Korach. Moshe tells Korach, Atava kol adatacha, you and all your community, heyu lefnei Hashem, you should come before God. Atava heim baron machar. Tomorrow, you, them, talking about the 250, and Aaron are all going to go in front of the Omoid. And everyone should take a fire pan and put incense on there. And you should bring the incense before Hashem. Ish machtato, everyone bring their own fire pan. 250 of these pans. Plus you, Korach, and Aaron. Everyone brings their own incense. And we'll find out which one Hashem accepts. So they do it. So everyone took a pan and they put fire on there, put a coal on there, put the incense on there, and they all stood in front of the entrance of the Ol Moed. And what happened? And a fire came out from before God and consumed these 250. They bring a ketoret, and they are consumed, they are wiped out, they are destroyed. Which reminds us of a previous Ish Me'et Hashem, which is the previous story of Nadav and Avihu, back in Parshat Shemini. Remember, they did pretty much the same thing, source 10. Vayichu b'nei Aaron Nadav Avihu, Ish Machtato, Nadav and Avihu each took their own pan, their own fire pan, exactly the same phrase. I mean, clearly these 250 are doing the same thing that Adam and Avihu did. They put the fire on them, they seemed like a Torah, put incense on there, they grew vu lifnei Hashem, and they go before Hashem. Eish zara, a strange fire, Asher lotzi ba'atam, that they were not commanded. Batete eish lifnei Hashem, fire comes out from before Hashem. Batoch alatam consumes them, vayimutu lifnei Hashem, and they die. That's not Adam and Avihu. That had happened at this point. We're assuming this is taking place right after Chedem Raglim and Tisha B'Av. So that had only happened, 4 months before. They knew exactly what was going to happen.
It also reminds you of the story of Eliyahu and the Baalim.
Nobody dies in there, right? Eliyahu and Har Carmel.
They were concerned by the fire.
I'm trying to remember the story there. I mean, I think it consumed it.
Remember that God came and ate the, and was the Carmel. Fire for Eliyahu?
Right.
And I thought the other guys were consumed with the fire too.
I'd have to look at that. That's not quite the same thing, right? The model here is that the person bringing this ketoret was the one that's being consumed.
Yeah.
Not the enemies. We're okay with the enemies. What's the deal with that? So Rashi on this.
There's a lot of people being burned to death, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a lot of yeah, that happens. Fire happens. But here it's the idea that 4 months later, like Moshe tells them, okay, you remember what happened to Nadav and Avihu? Everybody knows that. I want you to do the same thing. And they say, sure, let's go do that. That's Rashi's comment. Source 12. Lutip Shimhayu, were they idiots? Shekach Hutra Bahem, he warned them. This is what's gonna happen. The Kibbalim Lekarev, and they still were willing to get to bring this, to come close to with this Ketoret. Elet Heim Chatu Al Nafsham. Very obscure phrase. What does that mean? But they sinned about their souls. They weren't fools. But they sinned about their salt. We don't know what that means. Let's look at that. Shneimer et machtot hachataim ele ben ashotam. Because that's what the pasuk says, that's what describes them, that they were, you have to bring the fire pans of those who sinned b'nafshotam, and their nefesh. And that's from source 13, coming up after they die. Hashem tells Moshe, you need to save these fire pans of these 250, you're going to save them. Don't destroy them. Source 13. V'neber Hashem Moshe le'mor, Hashem tells Moshe the following. Amor Elazar ben Aaron Kohen, go tell Elazar. Go pick out these machtot, these fire pans that they brought. Pick them out of the ashes, out of all these burned bodies that you see. But throw away the coals out there. Kika deshi, because these machtot are holy. And the fire pans of these sinners who that sinned against their nefesh. Vasu otam rikwe pachim, and they'll beat them into strips. Tipuilam is beach, as a coating, as a plating for the altar. Ki gribum of Hashem baikdash, because they are brought to Hashem and they became holy. Viula ot lebnei Israel, and they will be a sign. So they take the machtot and they're going to wrap it around the mizbeach. So every time you go to the mizbeach, you'll see here are the remnants of those machtot.
Why is Elazar going there? He's a Kohen. He's not supposed to touch the dead bodies that are burnt.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if that counts as Tame, if you've been consumed. Is there any body left? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, okay. If God tells you that, I'm willing to say it's a Harach. Hashem said, do it, and they do it. But I hadn't worried about that. I had not worried about that before.
Okay.
Okay, and it's possible it means IRM is you can get a messenger to do it. Somebody else can pick it up, but Elazar, you're the one in charge to make sure it happens.
Right.
This sort of reminds me of the story of the mirrors that you hear about at the Midrash of the women. You know, the
that's not Midrash. That's the text straight.
It says
use the mirrors of the women. Right. It's significant.
No, but I'm saying the mirrors that show up in that Midrash about. I'm more beautiful than you. They look in the mirrors with their husband.
Right.
And no, I'm more beautiful than you. And they have children. That whole thing. You remember that?
Right.
Like the men had given up having relations.
Okay.
So and then they use the mirrors in the Mishkan.
They were doing something similar, right? We're taking that these objects have some kind of significance and we're going to save them.
Yeah.
Even though this was part of the rebellion against Moshe that, you know, the Korach and his rebellion. So here's the Emek Dabar again. He's defending these 250 that they weren't all villains here. That's source 15. That's in the two. At a machtot, you need to take these fire pans. Chazar la machtot. Hashem is going back to these pans. Shehemet lo nitchalu mikudeshu shatam, because they were not profaned. They kept their holiness. Even though they were used in basically working against Moshe, they're still not profaned. Adarabba, exact opposite. Helam hamakom yitbarach. Hashem made him even higher. Otam yikudusha akala luchamure. It went from being this minor holiness that they were just used for Ketorah to a much, much more, a much stronger form of holiness. They're now part of the Mizbeach itself. And they are chataim ayelim nafshotam. Because these people sinned against their nefesh. Kavanet Bayar, we already explained, the Nisib says, the 250 each, these 250, halol hayu chasidei hador, they were righteous. U'masru nafsham alavat Hashem, and they gave their lives up because they loved Hashem so much. U'mishum hachi ketiv zeh lashon b'nafshotam, that's why it says that they sinned b'nafshotam, with their neshamot, with their nefeshot, with their nefesh. They knew they were going to be consumed as they offered it, as they offered the Ketorah, but what better way to go? That's what Avad Hashem means, right? I want to be so close. I want to bring it there, and then I'm just destroyed by the fire of God. That's the way to die. Who nefesh ha-ma'ala, this is talking about their higher soul, nidikra neshama, they're talking about just the different levels of soulness, of nefesh, ruach, neshama, because that's what they were. Their sin was in their neshamot, shachatu b'mash ratzula lototad, that their sin was that they wanted their nefesh to be elevated. They wanted to be wiped out from the world. They willingly went and said they had the opportunity to do an avodah, even though it's going to be their death, that's worth it. Like Dashu. And they became holy. Because they brought the Mizketoret, they became holy. So I will bring them, I will accept that and allow them to go higher. What's the sign for Bnei Israel? That you'll see this on the Mizbeach every time you go to bring your karbonot. If you look at the pasuk later on, that two pesukim down, it says that no one should come close. That if you're not a kohen or a lady, you shouldn't come close to the mishkan. But that's not what the sign here is. You can't explain that the sign here shelo yikrab ishar, that to keep people away, that they shouldn't do this sort of thing ever again. Because that's written later on. Because if that's what the sign was, why does the pasuk separate it? It just says there will be a sign, and then three pesukim later it talks about don't do this ever again. The sign here, the meaning of the sign, the kan over here, something else entirely. That a person shouldn't think to himself, shouldn't think I'm so holy. Think that I know better than God. Hashem has given us rules about how we're supposed to become kadosh, and you think, and you feel that holy, you want to go the extra step. It still has to be within the limits of the halacha. Remember what happened to these people. They were kadosh, they meant well, and they were destroyed. Don't do that. Otu ot, and it's a sign still. Shemikomakom, that nonetheless, that this is wrong, what they did was wrong. Misha overalzeh, someone who violates this, lo ye'adam b'vezeh oto, don't spurn it. Don't dismiss that, the yearning to become closer to Hashem. That's legitimate. Akrei shekibul ansham, once they accepted their punishment, they went willingly, chalak ha-kadosh baruch hu lehem kavod, Hashem still honors them. There's a positive side of that. It's a bad thing, but we understand their motives. That's what Avat Hashem is all about. You want to get close to Hashem, and you have to realize where the limits are. They refuse to accept those limits. And they knew that. That's very similar to how we understand Nadav and Avihu, that they wanted to do this avoda. They did it, but it wasn't within the rules of Halacha, and they were destroyed. But they wanted to get close. And there's an interesting article on Torah musings by Leonard Grunstein, who I never heard of before. Evidently, he's a philanthropist. He's on the board of YU and the Israel Discount Bank. He had an article about Nisim. It was called "Why Nachshon and the Other Nisim Joined the Korach Rebellion," and he talks connected specifically to the Nasi that we know the most about, which is Nachshon ben Aminadab, the head of the tribe of Yehuda, and we know the famous Agada about Nachshon, way back when at the splitting of the sea, when they're all standing there and the Egyptians are coming, they're standing at the edge of the sea, and Nachshon jumps in.
He walks in up to his neck and beyond.
Right. That's source 15. This is the Mechilta. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Blash Nachem. Rabbi Yehuda explains the Vayavo Bnei Yisrael to Hayam. Bnei Yisrael went into the midst of the sea in the following way. The tribes were all standing there by Yam Suf. Everyone's saying, I'm not going in there. And say, I'm not going in there first. It says, that quote from Moshe, that Ephraim surrounded me with deceit, Mirma, Beit Yisrael, and lying, and Beit Yisrael surrounded me with lying. Nobody wanted to go in, nobody wanted to go to push forward. And as they're all standing there and arguing with one another, discussing with another, Kapas Nachshon ben Aminadav Nafalaya. Nachshon jumped and fell into the sea. Alav Katuv Omer, and they quote Psukim from Tilim Samach Tet, where we have this image of where David has an image of him of himself drowning, as though that David is looking at his answer, Nachshon. It says, Hoshini Elohim Piba Mayim Ad Nafesh, save me, O Lord, because the water is coming up to my neb. Coming up to my very soul, I'm going to die here. I'm drowning in the mud of the deeps. In my mud, I have no footing. Omer, al tish b'teni shibolot mayim. Let the whirlpools not carry me away. The deeps not swallow me. And the pit not close its mouth on me. All images of drowning. And saying that was referring to Nachshon as he's going up to his nose and up to his neck into the water. So as that's happening, Hashem tells Moshe, Yididi tovei bayam, my beloved, or translate, the one who loves me, is drowning in the sea, bayam soger, and the sea is covering him, the soner rodef, and the enemy is chasing, and you're standing here and praying to me. So Moshe tells to Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, what else could I do? He just jumped. Amar lo, no, that's Hashem says, no, raise your staff over the water, split it, and Bnei Yisrael can go in the midst of the sea. That's the story of Nachshon. He jumps in, and Hashem says, look, there's my beloved jumping in. And this is the way later Grinstein puts it. The Hebrew term used in the Midrash account is Yididi, my beloved. The word choice is interesting. It didn't say, for example, my righteous one, rather my beloved one. It suggested that the word selected may ironically adumbrate, means foreshadow, to what caused Nachshon's undoing, what's happening here. He loves God, he is the Yidin, more than most. And so he's going to jump in. He's going to risk his life to show his love of Hashem. However, the singular focus of loving God may have been expense of it being deficient in Yirat Shamayim, in the awe side, the pulling back. And that's what happens here with the Ketoret. They're willing to risk everything out of this Ahavat Hashem. And we see that throughout, the Nasim do things their own way. They're not taking rules. That's, I guess that's part of being a Nasi, but they're not listening to, they're generally not listening to rules. I think it's right. If religiously means something to me, that's what they're going to do. We saw that in the building of the Mishkan. When the Nasiim don't donate, this is Rashi talking about the gifts of the Chanukah Tabayit. Chanukah Tabayit Be'er.
We know that Nachshon was one of them, though.
I'm sorry.
We know that Nachshon was one of these people, or
was
that
the Nasiim? So, I just asked, how do we know that Nachshon is one of the Nasiim? And we talked before. It says they're Nasiyei Eda, Kri Moed. Who is talking about the Nasiim? Right. So it's going to be Nasiyim. So we're assuming. And Rashi describes that Eliyahu Tzur, who is the head of Shimon V'Chabei Rav, and all of his colleagues. So I'm going to assume that if Nachshon was still alive at this point, he was one of them. And if not, we'll take it as symbolic. That's what the Nasiim were all about. They were going to do what they were. They were the leaders, the leadership, but they were going to do what they wanted. Amar Rabbi Natan, Mar Nasiim L'Nadev Kan B'Chanukat Chanukat HaMizbeach, that when it comes to the inauguration of the Mishkan, the Nasiim brought their own gifts. Why did they come and bring gifts? But the first ones bring gifts. Lechad Mishkan. When it comes to actually building the Mishkan, lo hitna devu tchila. They didn't give anything. They didn't donate straight. Alakach amru nisiim, because the nisiim said to themselves back when it was time to build the Mishkan, hitna devu tibur mashi nadevu. Let the whole community donate what they can donate. Whatever's left over, we'll donate it. We're rich, we can do that. We'll donate whatever's left over. Given Shushish Limu Tibur Atakol, but turns out that the people had enough and donated everything that was needed, and there was virtually nothing left for the Nasiim to donate. Amriata Malan Asot, they said, what can they do? So they'll give more gifts later on at the actual Chanukat HaMizbeach. So the actual mitzvah was to give for the building. That's where it says, verse 18. The Debar Shem Moshele Mor, the Debar Ben Yisrael Bichuli Truma. Go, we want donations. May call Isha Shei Divin Eloi Bo, anyone who feels generous, Tichua Trumati, take the donations. Shem says, here's where I want the donations, and Nasiim says, we don't have to do that. We're going to build it, we're going to give later. And in fact, when they bring their gifts to the Chanukah Mizbeach, Moshe doesn't want to take it. Verse 19. They bring their gifts before the Mishkan. Moshe refused to take them because Hashem didn't ask for all these other gifts. They were bringing, including part of that Keturah and all these other things. That wasn't part of what was needed. Until Hashem says, go ahead and take it. You can use it. That's okay. They mean, well, you can accept that. Back by the Parshat Naso of the Chanukah Mizbeach. And so that Mr. Grunstein summarizes this idea of what was happening by quoting the Shalah, Shnei Hilchot Abrit, Moharowitz. Well, I could not find the original source, so I'm going to have to quote him here. I don't like secondary sources. According to the Shalah, the group of 250 had virtuous intentions. They wanted to be holy. That's what they wanted to do, and they felt like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to bring this Ketoret. I know it's dangerous, but it's worth it to be able to actually do the Avodah. We can't do the Avodah otherwise. The reason they weren't trying to rebel against God, rather desired more fully to embrace God and holiness. But it led them to rebellion because they wondered why it was only Aaron and his sons that were involved in these holy ritual activities, not them. And they thought this was only because Moses had used his unique position and access to God to implore and pray to God, to appoint his brother and his nephews to these roles. It's not fair. Why can't I bring Ketoret? Aaron can bring the Ketoret. I really want to bring the Ketoret. And so they want to express their Avat Hashem in the way that they wanted to do it and wouldn't accept any of these limitations. We're going to get as close to Hashem as we possibly can. And that was their undoing. So what does that have to do with the Techelet? What's this idea of the Talit Shekula Techelet? And I didn't realize this, but evidently Talit Shekula Techelet is a modern Hebrew expression. Does it sound familiar? Wikipedia says so. That the sarcastic expression, a talit shekula techelet, you are a talit, you know, Mickey, recognize that? Is widely used to refer to someone.
Yes, they do. They say that.
Yeah. Wait, you think you're a talit shekula techelet, right?
Even the low dati, they use that phrase.
Right. That's what it means. It's to show me that is ostensibly but not really pure, immaculate, and virtuous. Right? Tell me that. You know, you're called a talit chul, okay, if you think you're absolutely perfect, but you're not. So that's what a talit chul, excuse me, talit chul techelet really meant. What does techelet symbolize?
It symbolizes heaven.
Right. We know
the
that.
Divine.
So there's a It was an article by Ronan Neuwirth, who's in the Shiva Hester in Renana. I don't know who he is, but it was an amazing article there that cites the Ramban. I've looked at this Ramban before, but I never read it. I never really understood it. Ramban says that Techelet is bad. Techelet is dangerous. In the Parsha Tzitzit, it talks about. This is the Ramban, source 22. Amar lo teturu acharei levavka. You know, that's the pasuk. You're supposed to look at the trailer on the tzitzit and remember the mitzvot, and lo teturu acharei levavka, not be turned away according to your eyes. Ramban says, it's hear me mena. Be careful of the techelet. Shelo yitubo, don't make a mistake of it. Shelo yaharu min techelet, that the techelet shouldn't make you think, be minut, about heresy of avodah zarah. Mitzvot, but it has its dangers. And the Ramban says, "Va'maskil yavin." That's when the Ramban says, "I'm not going to explain this anymore." A word to the wise: if you don't understand, you're not going to get it. So, this Rav Neuwirth explains it more. But he quotes, "What's the maskil yavin?" Look, the Amar Rabbi Meir manishdan techelet. Right? What's the significance of techelet? And that's what said. That's the Gemara Menachot. What is techelet mean? Yeri Meir Omer. Why is techelet different from all other dyes? Why use that in our tzitzit, on our clothing? Techelet reminds us of the sea. V'yam domela rakia, and the sea reminds us of the heavens. Rakia the kisei kavod, and the heavens remind us of the kisei hakavod, of the heavenly throne. Meaning that's where the place where God sits. Shneamar, and we quote the pasuk where it describes the Kisei Kavod is from Parshat Ki Tisa, where the elders go up Har Sinai before Mamon Har Sinai, and they have a vision of Hashem. And it says, "V'tachat raglav k'masei libnat ha-sapir," and under his feet, what looked like a sapphire brick, esam hashamayim ha-tohar, with the purity of the sky, as clear as the sky. And the actual pasuk starts out, verse 24, "V'yu'u et Elokei Yisrael," they saw a vision of the God of Israel. We have no idea what that means. That's the Maaseh Merkava. This is, you know, far more Kabbalistic than we're going to get into. But whatever experience they had this idea of a Tachar Raglav K'maseh Libnat Sapir, this sapphire brick that was that Hashem was sitting on. Whatever that means. That's the Techelet. T'kiseh Kavod. So Rav Neuwirth points out.
I thought that thing was like an ottoman that he had his feet on the block of the sapphire, the sapphire.
Footstool.
Yeah, tachat raglav. Could be. I'm fine with footstool there. I have no idea how to even read that at all. You know, what does that even mean? You know, and you compare it to the vision in Yechezkel, you compare it to Yeshaya. That's far too mystical for me, but they had this image. And these were the Zakanim. Would it include the Nisim? Possibly. You know, were they part of the elders who went up to have this vision? They were important people in the community, but they were there. They had this vision of Techela, somewhere in there, of the Etzem HaShamayim, the clear skies. They point out that Techela is the color of the sea and the color of the sky are striking because they're not dyes, they're not colors. Why is the sky blue? Raleigh scattering, right? Everybody knows that, right?
What?
The sky is blue because of Raleigh scattering, but the light comes in, and then the longer wavelengths are scattered more. So that's a sharper angle. So light from the sun is scattered into our eyes as it hits particles in the air. It's not, if you have a container of air, it doesn't look blue. If you get some water, it doesn't look blue. If you're looking at the whole thing as a whole, it looks blue. And even if you don't know anything about Raleigh scattering and photons.
Why does it look blue? Because our photoreceptors have as their range blue on one end.
Okay, so but that does explain why the sky is blue. You know, that we see other colors. Right, but most of what we're seeing, what gets scattered out of the atmosphere is the short wavelength blue to violet, and that's what hits our photoreceptors. But beyond that, I don't think anyone at the time of the Gemara knew anything about photoreceptors or photons or scattering and all that. But air is clear, the sky is blue. Water is clear, the sea is blue. We can observe that. This is the way of New Earth puts it. Techelet, in this sense, is a color that can only be seen from a distance. As a whole. Perspectiva rachava, from a broad perspective.
Perspective.
Yes, from a broad perspective. Tzev amshel the color of the sea. Hula maset tzeva shakuf lachalutin. Water in the ocean is clear. It's transparent. But if you're looking at it from a distance as a whole, it has the sense of being blue. Not if you're looking at the Mississippi, it's brown, but if we're in the Bahamas, we can certainly see the blue sea. This phenomenon. This phenomenon is also true of the air and the atmosphere, that's transparent. And he read Chayot Merachot, looks blue, again, from a distance, as a whole. Achat kama, how much more so, nechona hi avodazu. This is the phenomenon, this is the way to look at, b'chol kashrula kisei kavod. That's what it means to have the kisei kavod is domela rakia or layam. That we can't get too close. You can't see it from up close. The gilui malchuto shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the revelation of Hashem's kingship, of his rule, that that ain't kan ba'olam, within the world. The Kadosh Baruch Hu nitin lagalot ba'olam ach v'rak v'merchak. We experience, if we experience the divine, it's got to be far away. We can't get too close. Which nice to mevinim anu, and the condition that we understand, sheyesh pe'er atzum, there's this huge difference, a huge chasm, b'masha anu ro'im, b'tofsim, between what we can see and we can understand, b'en ha'emet ha'mukhvatet, between the absolute truths. Chelet reminds us the kisei gavod, but it's got to be distant. That's what the danger that the Ramban is talking about. If we think we can get too close to the chelet, then we're going to get consumed. That's getting too close to the divine. That's at that point you're worshiping avodah zara. Asakana gedola matchila kasher sovrim anu sheganu l'tchelet. The great danger is we think we can get to the chelet. We understand everything. We can get to that kisei gavod. So that, I would say, is the image of the talit shekul tochelet. Yeah. Right, I'm gonna actually wear the tochelet. It's not gonna be a fringe on my clothes. That keeps its distance there, reminds me of the kisei kavod, but I don't think I can actually get there. I'm gonna be enwrapped in it. That's what the Nesiyim wanted. Be enwrapped in the tochelet. We can get to the chelet. That's a sign of being close to Hashem, which is the goal of Ahavat Hashem. We want to be close to Hashem. The danger of the Ahava is that we'll call antinomianism. Love means never having to say you're sorry. Or as the Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says in Surah 26, Amar Shimon ben Yochai, Ahava mekalkel teshuvah. Love destroys all boundaries. Everything you do is right with this true sense of love. So the Rambam says if it's Avat Hashem, it has to be limited, because Avat Hashem has to lead to Yirat Hashem. That's verse 27. Zman she'adam mitbonen b'dvarim eler. Rambam is a philosopher. If we think about all these things, the nature of the divine, about the nature of the world, we think about these things well. We'll see if Ava Makam. We'll come to love Hashem even more, in the sense of wanting to be close. Kimsa nafsho, v'titzamei nafsho, his soul will thirst, v'chmet b'saro, and his flesh will yearn, l'ahovat ha'makom baruch hu, will yearn to love Hashem. But, v'yireh v'yifached, he will sense the fear, and yira, and awe, v'shiflato, from his loneliness, v'dalato, v'kolato, from his the poverty, and that the closer we get to Hashem, the further we have to feel away from Him. And this is where Soloveitchik puts it. In the experience of the love of God, the drive toward oneness with Him, the norm, which is the norm being the law, the rules, what we call the halacha, retreats. Hava mekalkel et teshuvah. We love Hashem, then everything is possible. We can do anything. However, the consummation of unity with God is neither desirable nor possible. Indeed, identification of man with God with man is blasphemy. That's the meaning of getting too close to the chelet. And that's what we say, that's what the Nesiyim got to. The love of God is constantly followed by the fear of God. One has to lead to the next one, which is the consciousness of ontic separation, where we realize that ontic means exist in awareness of existence, that we realize we are separate. We have to realize that. Can't get too close. And that, what that means is that my task is only to accept and pursue the norm, that I have to obey Hashem's will. That's Kabbalah or Malchut Shemayim. That's a part of Yira. The closer I get with my Ahava, I have to be balanced by my Yira, I realize I will always remain separate. Therefore, the mitzvot masiyot, practical commandments, can never be eliminated. As long as I have Yira, then I can keep the mitzvot. All I have is Ahava, and then the mitzvot are meaningless. That was a problem with Shabtai Tzvi. I said that everything was fine. We're going to be close to Hashem. And if you look at this book, My Mind Between Philosophy and Halacha, he has a little thing about Hasidus about having the same kind of problem. In a word, fear rehabilitates the norm. Our Ahavat Hashem brings us closer to Hashem. The Yira pulls us away and says, no, we got to stay within the limits. We have boundaries. And that fundamentally, that's what these 250 Nesiim were missing. They weren't Giborim. They couldn't control their Yetzer. They couldn't control their Avod Hashem. They wanted to be all Techelet. They wanted to be close to Hashem. They wanted to be experienced that of being a Talit Shekul Techelet. And that's what ended up destroying them in the end. So.
Nice job.
Whatever, you know, we need to feel the Avod Hashem. We need to feel that separation, the ontic separation as well. Keep our tzitzit at the end of, as a fringe on our garments, not enwrapped in the tchelet.
Danny, do you think it has anything to do with Nadav and Avihu also, their kind of love of Hashem and wanting to bring that fire? Do you think there was any
absolutely
similar?
Exactly the same feeling. I mean, the parallel is absolute. I think that's what, right. Nadav and Avihu, they were tzaddikim in the same sense. Mm-hmm. They want to get close to Hashem.
Right.
And they're destroyed. It's stronger here because these 250 knew what was going to happen. And they did it willingly.
Because they saw it with
Nadav and Avihu.
Uh-huh.
And they thought it's worth it.
Okay.
They're not cheap shim. They know what's going to happen, but that's destruction. Uh-huh.
Very interesting. Thank you so much.
Wasn't the whole story that this rebellion was they really didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael? They wanted to stay in the desert with God's presence?
I don't think I put it that way. I would read the story of the Meraglim that way.
Yeah.
Also, the Meraglim, you know, being an Hashem, they're a great man who meant well, but didn't want to take the chance of going to Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
That's an Aviram. Wanted to go back to Egypt. Korach wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael, but under his leadership. And these 250 just wanted to be close to Hashem. They certainly would want to listen to do whatever it took to get close to Hashem. Okay, have a great Shabbos, everyone.
Have a good Shabbos.
We'll see you. Thank you.
Have a good Shabbos.
I'm sorry, Janet.
Shabbat shalom. We don't have class Sunday.
No class Sunday. I am working in the hospital overnight.
Okay.